Roche in the studio. Good afternoon, Alan.
Hello, Jim.
How's your Friday going?
Great.
Great. We got a really good response to the first podcast last week, so everyone enjoyed themselves, it seemed, so we decided to do another one, and here you are. This week, I just wanted to touch on the metropolitan area of how it was created, buildings of significance, historical significance, that sort of thing. We all know, well, if you're from around this area, you all know the All Saints Church and so forth. Tell me a little bit about why that was created, when, and its legacy today.
All Saints Church, of course, was the Anglican Church, and Bishop Selwyn was responsible for the churches in Auckland. He had a big diocese to look after, and he was building a church for St. Stephen's School in Parnell. And then he suddenly realised that we have about 800 people coming out to Howick in 1847, and they needed a church. So instead of giving it to St. Stephen's School, they put it on the college. That's the Anglican College at Kohimarama, and they put it on the two college vessels, the Undine and the Marion, and they were brought down to Howick Beach where they offloaded them. All the timbers were ready to re-erect at Parnell, so they had the timbers labelled and they knew where they were going to go.
What's that little church at Parnell you can see from sort of Tamaki Drive? That's pretty famous. Everyone wants to get married there and so forth.
Just
Judges Bay Church, yes, is it?
Very historic, that's right. Very old.
Okay, so from the same era as the...
Yes, similar era, okay. era to our church.
Yep.
But you see, Bishop Selwyn organised it. He had several builders and he got the students from St. John's College to come out and do the manual work in erecting the church. And he was very keen to have the first building built in Howick was the House of God. So they dragged it up the hill from Howick Beach up to the little knoll where it sits today.
Why was that spot chosen strategically? Just because they had it on top of the
hill? And initially, the churches were allowed to choose an acre of land without charge for a church and graveyard.
Yep.
And they were allowed to buy another 4 acres nearby for the glebe, which would be land that they could graze a horse, they could grow crops for the minister.
Okay.
And the Catholics had the same conditions as the Anglicans. If you're a Presbyterian and Methodist, I'm sorry. If you were a good Presbyterian, you went to the Presbyterian services, and it took some years for them to build their own church. However, the Bishop Selwyn, building the first church in Howick, and he claimed to have the building ready for the first settlers, for the first few services, if you sack it on the bundles of shingles, as they did in the building, they got wet because there was no roof.
Sure.
It took some weeks to produce a roof. Now, the Catholics at the same time built a Raupo cottage or Raupo building, which
just
they...
Just for people who don't know, just explain what a Raupo
is. Taking bundles of Raupo that grows in the swamps and alongside the creeks of Howick, and there's still plenty around, and they would bind it into bundles when it was dry, and they would put it on a kanaka or manuka frame, and they could build buildings quickly and effectively and very cheaply.
And they're on display at the Howick Historical
Correct.
Village, aren't they?
That's exactly
okay.
Right.
And that we touched, I think, in the last episode that when the festivals arrived and they'd been promised a house and land, in the main the houses hadn't been built yet, and they were forced in inverted commas to live in these Raupo, which were a bit less hospitable than they were hoping for.
That's right. And of course, if it rained, they all leaked.
Yep.
And that created a lot of mud on the floor, etc. The Anglicans always claimed to have the first church built in Howick, you see, but in actual fact, it wasn't lined until the 1890s. The Catholics, who always had a friendly relationship with the Anglicans, They built their church and school in the Ralpo building, and then in 1854 built their wooden church, and they completed it by lining it. So the Catholics always claimed
that their
church was the first completed, meaning it had lining, whereas the Anglican church, it took many years to pull.
Now, is that the same place? But there was an old wooden...
Our Lady, Star of the Sea.
So that's the Catholic church. That's a reproduction, isn't it?
Well, the wooden church was demolished in 1960 to make way for the present stone church.
Okay. So why did they demolish that church in 1960?
It wasn't big enough, and it was starting to rot.
Okay. And so the historical aspect of it wasn't enough to retain it. The council decided to go.
That's right. We had a fight with All Saints Church at the same time. We had a chairman of vestry who'd been to Japan, and they'd used permanent materials up there, treated timbers. And he claimed that if we demolished All Saints Church, built it out of treated timbers, it would last a lot longer because it had borer.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, look, let me, I'll get in touch with some boys from St. Kettigan's, which I did, the boarding establishment, and they came out with a little can and a syringe, and we went right through the All Saints Church two Saturday afternoons, and we killed every bit of borer. And you go there through today, and you have difficulty finding borer. Yes, we had a lovely, an excellent kill of borer. And so the chairman of vestry had to swallow his words and say, no, we won't be demolishing it. But he was adamant that we had to demolish it and build it again of permanent materials. You don't do that sort of thing to historic buildings in New Zealand.
No, absolutely. And given that the historical value of Howick as well, you wouldn't think anything would really get touched, would you?
Exactly.
No, I'm quite wrong there.
The part of the problem was that Haisler, who had a farm in Bleakhouse Road, when he died, in his will, he willed his farm for a new church in Howick on the site of the old one. So the church had to change the will, which they did. Instead of building on the site of the old one, they built it next door.
I see. And when did the Presbyterian influence come into Howick?
There were a few Presbyterians early on who came from Scotland. And they had services in their own little fenceable cottage. And when they got larger, they decided to build a church.
Okay. So churches were obviously the focus of the community at the time.
They're important landmarks for the area.
And used as meeting places, I presume, things like that.
Yes.
Okay. So once they were in place, I understand the road that Picton Street now occupies, that took its origins out, what do you call it?
The village of Howick was in the valley from Picton Street south.
Yeah, okay.
In the valley between Cook Street and Ridge Road, Union Road and Picton Street.
Mm-hmm.
And just by sheer luck in many ways that the churches were on the ridge. The idea of placing Howick out here was to protect Howick from possible attack on Auckland by Māori of the Thames area. And if they came past in the evening or even when it was wet and cold like the last week, they could easily slide by and they wouldn't be noticed.
Not noticed, yes.
But
so the strategic value of
the churches were on the ridge. And ridges were where we put most of our roads because you didn't need a bridge.
No.
They're easier to manage.
And originally built to service the outlying farming community.
Correct.
So it was a service town. The rapid urbanisation happened after the land wars, or was that in place before?
No, earlier, much earlier. than the War of the Waikato.
What was the population of Howick around 1847?
About 800.
Okay.
Now, as soon as the church was built, these soldiers, of course, they were used to having a noggin of rum every midday.
Fair enough.
A noggin is about an egg cup full of rum, and they always added water to it, so you couldn't keep it for a party. You drank it on the spot. And so they were keen that the next building in Howick, and Reverend and Bishop Selwyn mentioned that the church was built first building in Howick, but the second was the wet canteen, which we now call Shamrock Cottage in Selwyn Road, where they could go and get their liquor allowance.
Wet canteen, I like the sound of that.
Initially, it was just a simple structure put up within days where they put a canvas up and open their crates of liquor.
Was the Shamrock, was that coined because most of these guys were Irishmen?
No, that came later. That came later. Initially, it was called the Royal Hotel.
Okay.
And one of the fences...
Or was that just a grandiose name for a booze barn, or did they have lodgings as well? Or?
Initially, of course, the wet canteen had no accommodation. But by early 1848, remember, they came in November 1847, they built the Shamrock Cottage as we know it today. And that was the Royal Hotel, and Benjamin Lewis, he was a fencible. And then he realised that if he got rid of his fencible responsibilities, he could run a pub and you could make money. And he did. So he resigned as passage. He had to repay the passage money. But in actual fact, he was smart. He'd been serving in a regiment in Australia. He was brought over to Auckland, and then he joined the fencibles here in Auckland.
Would his passage have been...
he didn't have a passage.
I didn't have one.
No, because that was all paid for, because he was a soldier brought from Australia to Auckland.
Okay.
So he didn't have to pay a lot of money for his passage money like any other fencible would.
Yeah.
And so he's able to resign his position in the fencibles and open a pub. And he did very well.
Yeah.
And you know, the people of Auckland used to talk about some of the best wines available in Auckland were available at the Royal Hotel in Howick.
Sure.
And there was accommodation there. They had 11 rooms. Now, if you look at the cottage today, you think, how on earth did they get 11 rooms?
I've never actually been in it, but I've gone past and I thought, yeah.
There were small rooms.
Very
just,
small.
Just enough for a bed.
Okay.
And, of course, they served meals. They had stables at the back where they could leave their horses.
Did they get nefarious in there at all, or in terms of punch-ups and things like that?
No. They, because it was a meeting place, and that's another use of the hotels. Remember, hotels... It was against the law. The law said that fencibles weren't allowed to own hotels.
Mm-hmm.
So you think, oh, how on earth did he get away with it? But
is that because he resigned his commission?
Or? No, the officers realised that Howick was 15 miles from Auckland. If they needed a drink, we've got a number of examples of those people, they'd go to Auckland, dying for a drink, and let's stay for 2 or 3 days. And spend all their savings.
Mm-hmm.
So the officers allowed hotels to be built in Howick,
okay.
Even though it was against the rules of the fencible immigration scheme. And before very long, there were quite a few pubs.
Any points of interest along, not necessarily Picton Street, but the surrounding streets, Moore Street and Fencible Drive, any points of interest that don't exist today? In those areas, in terms of architecture or...
Yes, it took a little while for industries to start in Howick. We had a timber mill where the Howick post office is today. We had brushworks next to the Royal Hotel, Shamrock Cottage. By the way, Shamrock Cottage was called Shamrock by William Crush Daldy and his wife. Now, his wife was a suffragette. It was quite famous for her suffragette activities. And he, of course, William W.C. Daldy, is well known. He founded the Auckland Harbour Board. He arranged for water from Western Springs. And he did a lot of work in Auckland with the fire brigade and other major activities. He was on the board of Bank of New Zealand, New Zealand Insurance, etc. And he sailed in 1841 from Liverpool to Auckland on his vessel, the schooner called Shamrock.
Yeah, I see.
And then he set up a company, and he was trading between Auckland and Sydney.
Was he a Shamrock. Was he a refugee from the Great Hunger that
no,
went to Liverpool?
No, 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 not at all. Quite separate.
Not quite separate. Okay.
So the hotels were the meeting places for Howard. And when the elections came along, generally they had their meetings in a hotel.
Okay, as you would. Rather than having them in those mud huts.
After a while, the pensions were paid out in the hotel because that's where they were going to go.
Yeah. Anyone got paid in a little brown envelope, I suspect?
Remember, their pensions initially were paid monthly, but before very long, they were paid quarterly per year. Now, if you got paid your pension four times a year between pension days, you were a bit hard up for money.
A bit hard up for money, exactly. What was the monetary system like? Was there a bank locally, or did that come from the central bank?
No, the first banks came in more modern times. We didn't have banks in Howick.
Okay. No. The bank who administered the payments for the fencibles?
The officers gave out those pensions.
Yeah.
And after 1858, when the fencible scheme basically expired, they would collect their pay, a government agent would pay out the pensions.
Excellent. And just touching on, we were talking about Howick Beach and its development. Initially, there was a wharf down there, wasn't there?
1854, a wharf was built mainly by the 58th Regiment, who were stationed in Auckland at Albert Barracks. And they were, because there was no activities, no crises, they were allowed to come to Howick and build the wharf.
Okay. All right. And that was, were they part of an Army Corps of Engineers sort of thing, or were they tradesmen and their own
riders? No, they weren't. No. But they were just labourers, basically.
Just labourers.
But they did have a Royal Engineer officer who would design it and make sure it was built perfectly.
Okay, so then that was the main docking point for ferry boats from the city.
Yes, that's right. And remember, there was no roads initially.
Sure. Were they steamboats, these boats?
No, they were sailing vessels.
Yeah, and how long would it have taken to get from Auckland City to
Howe? Oh, a couple of hours.
Okay.
Yes. Took about the mail delivery. Namapu was the mail man, and he went to Auckland twice a week and returned twice a week. And he was allowed 4 hours to walk from Howick to Auckland.
But he was walking.
He was walking barefooted.
Yeah.
And he got paid £1 a week, which is
straight down the pack around the highway, wasn't it?
Yes, but he had to go over the on the ferry boat, over the Pemua ferry, and then he'd walk up to the Remuera Coach Road, which is up near St John College of today, and then he'd walk through to Auckland, through Newmarket or down to down to Hobson Bay.
And where was the central post office? Sort of down with the railway tracks?
Right in central Auckland.
Okay, sort of Brunite, sort of area. Yes. Okay, excellent.
But the his problem was, dear old Namapu, Māori, in 1858, the government advertised for tenders to take the mail from Auckland to Howick, and a European who had a pony could do it faster, so he got the job.
Yep.
And when he gave up, the next...
Couldn't have that fellow just got a pony then?
He could have, but he didn't have money.
Okay. You think someone would have sponsored it to save his feet in another 4 hours.
And the next one had a buggy and a pony, so he could do it even faster.
Yeah. What about basic services in the Howick area in terms of medical services?
We had a doctor, Dr. Bacon, who lived in Bleak House.
Bacon.
And he administered...
Bleak House kind of more of a well-to-do part of Howick in those days?
No.
Wasn't?
Being an officer, the officers' homes were two-storied, and we had one at Bleak House, one at Bell House, which is Captain Smith's homestead, which is now part of the Howick Historical Village, and we have one at One Tanglewood Place, which is Captain McDonald's home. So we have two of these fenceable officers' homes. Now, remember, Howick had no trees initially, so a two-storied building on a ridge was a very obvious strategically placed.
Sure, because you get that big panoramic view out through the whole...
And they could see see you and you could see them.
Yeah.
And Dr. Backhart, fortunately, I got to know his granddaughter quite well, and she left me his reminiscences, quite detailed reminiscences. And he complained that he didn't have enough work to do.
Oh, really?
I suspect that the Irish coming here used traditional remedies. We had several midwives, the wise women, as they were called, and they delivered the babies.
Well, they had a lot of children, didn't they?
They sure did, yes. 6 to 10 was common.
Yeah. What was the rate of infant deaths in those days?
Until 1854, there were few deaths. In 1854, the scarlet fever hit Howick. And that was brought out by a fenceful ship, the Anne, that brought the fencibles to Otakuhu. And scarlet fever, because they had no resistance to it, we had 50 children in Howick die. And generally it was the young children.
And they had no antibiotics then either.
No. Scarlet fever today, and we still have scarlet fever.
Yes.
You go to your doctor, you got a bit of a rash, you go to the doctor, he says, oh, that's scarlet fever, you get an antibiotic and you're cured in no time.
Mm-hmm. So the health of Howick in terms of its residents was pretty good.
It was very good. It was better than if they'd stayed batting in Britain or in Ireland.
Yeah. Okay. What about, because it was, you know, a bit of an outpost, you know, away from the big metropolis of Auckland City, services, it was difficult to get, as you said, the mail guy ran his way to Auckland twice a week. any local industry or anything like that, aside from the farming?
If you saved up a bit of money,
yeah,
you could buy a cow for £5.
Okay.
And many of the fencibles put money together. You know, we had a cow club for a while.
Oh,
so
right.
You put your money together and buy a cow and you could share the profits.
Okay.
And that worked efficiently for a short while. And if you had a cow, you could sell the milk. You can make butter from the cream. And yes, it was a good way of making a living.
And obviously with the fertile volcanic soil and so forth,
yes,
those plains were, you know, popping up coomer all over the place. What else did they grow?
Well, they grew cabbages.
Yep.
They did grow some coomer, but potatoes. Potatoes, because the Irish loved potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And when they got to New Zealand, potatoes had no blight.
Yeah.
They could grow two crops a year, potatoes.
Yeah.
And so potatoes and cabbages were a major export. And they'd take those through to Auckland where they could sell them in the markets there or, you know, with grocery stores.
What about livestock and poultry?
Some had ducks, hens,
yeah.
The other thing I didn't mention is goats.
Mm-hmm.
If you kill a goat, you've got enough food for a family for a few days. Remember, there's no refrigeration. And so goats were more popular for meat than other animals.
Okay. Do they keep longer as well?
Well, you could slaughter a goat and you could sell it amongst you and your neighbours and you could eat the whole thing within a few days. So even in summer, it's
so they didn't need to hang and salt them or anything.
No, they didn't. No, they didn't.
No. Did they preserve any other type of meat?
Well, you could buy canned meat at that time.
Yeah.
They were canning meat way back.
Yeah.
So yeah, they had canned meat.
Now those wood opening tools that come with it, didn't they? We can never get those to work.
No. But it's interesting, they did use canned meat often.
Yeah. Was that because they'd come from Britain and obviously with sailing on vast distances?
They were used to having canned meat on the ship.
Salted meat.
Salted meat. Thing. You could buy pork very cheaply in Howick. Threepence a pound.
Did a lot of people run pigs around here?
Yes.
Yeah.
Pigs are very common.
Yeah.
And they were buying pork off the Maori who were bringing it up from Umapuia and other settlements in the area.
And chicken wasn't common, was it, in those days?
No.
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 When did that, when did chicken farming, sort of the light go on for some people?
Ooh, it's much later.
Were they harder to get hold of, or what was the issue?
Initially, hens were kept for their eggs,
yeah,
rather than to eat.
For their meat, until something worked out, they were delicious, is that what?
Well, they, pork was so cheap.
Yeah.
Pork and potatoes was the standard fare.
Pork and potato.
And of course, with bread. And they made bread in their camp ovens on the open fire.
What about sweet things, desserts and anything like that?
Not a lot.
Not a lot?
No, very little of that sort of thing.
They obviously had sugar, though, and...
Sugar was available,
yep.
But relatively expensive.
Okay.
Yes.
Is everything had to be imported from
that's right.
Big smoke box?
There was honey available, but only that's for the world to do.
For the world to do.
Yes.
So what would be the typical diet of a, you know, labourer in this area in the 1840s, 50s, 60s?
They'd have meat, probably, if it was available. Now, meat wasn't always available, and a number of them got... There was letters about having potatoes and cabbage and how boring it was. And then they'd have pork. And remember, they were boiling the pork. They weren't roasting it like we would.
No. Yeah, it'd be tough to do that in one of your mud huts as well.
Well, that's right.
You'd start to get a little frustrated after a while.
And, of course, keeping the flies away and that sort of thing was always it. Bit of a problem.
Yeah. And they store food above the ground to
they would
vermin.
And then they put a cheesecloth or similar over it to keep the flies away.
What technology and stuff did they bring from Britain in terms of preservation and that sort of thing?
Not a lot. And I mean, in their huts, remember,
because refrigeration hadn't been invented.
No refrigeration until 100 years later, basically.
Yeah.
But the in their Raupo cottages, fleas were a major problem, and other bugs would, cockroaches would fall out of the roof. So that's why they went to bed when it started to get dark, and they'd get up when it gets light.
Yeah.
Basically, because if you lit your candle at night, the bugs would drop out of the roof, which wasn't always very nice.
No, it wouldn't have, especially if the roof was leaking as well. That's excellent. Thanks for coming in, Alan. I think you've covered a lot of the bases, as you always do. Episode 2 of Howick History. I'm Jim Birchall. He's Alan Roche. And we'll see you again on episode 3, where our special guest is John Steele, the author of a new book called No Ordinary Man, which details a fellow called Arthur Purchas. And you'll hear all about that in episode 3. We'll see you next time, Alan.
Thank you.